Item 5, from the Director, Department of Transportation, providing an informational report regarding the status of the East-West Bus Rapid Transit BRT project. This item is informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Can you state your name very loudly and...
Well, I'm John Myers with AECOM, the project manager for the East-West BRT project.
I'm Ashley Booth from HNTB. I'm the deputy project manager as well on this project.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we do have a brief, about a 10-minute presentation we'll get through, and obviously it's in formal presentation, so if you have questions along the way, committee members, you can certainly ask us at any point. Can you just rotate the slides for me? Thank you. Hard to see the map, but essentially we're excited to be here this morning. I think we were here about a year ago or so to this committee and gave a brief update, but we're here to give you some exciting progress and news about the progression of the East-West BRT project. Just for some background and information on what the project is and what Bus Rapid Transit is, I'll give you that right now, and Dan will talk about some of the details of our progression. But essentially, the East-West BRT project is a 9-mile corridor that runs essentially from the lakefront, from the proposed Couture high-rise along Wisconsin Avenue, through the near west side, Story Hill, ultimately out to Wauwatosa on Blue Mountain Road, eventually up to MRMC, the Regional Medical Campus, and it terminates on the west end at the Swan Boulevard Park and Ride. As many of you folks know, bus riders in the room and folks that live here, this is one of Milwaukee's region's most congested, busy, and dense corridors, and that was one of the primary reasons why this, what I guess we'd call pilot project, would be the first BRT of hopefully many to be implemented in our region. BRT is essentially four key components that advance or make it an enhanced improvement for bus service. Essentially, dedicated lanes, as you can see in this map, we've got roughly 50% of the 9-mile corridor is in dedicated bus-only lanes. That is a critical improvement and change from your standard express bus or local service. It provides more efficiency, more time travel savings. It also provides better reliability, not only on the East-West BRT, but also north-south or any other crossing transfer routes that come into this corridor to provide that easy, smooth transfer process. A couple other key things. So the second key thing that makes it Bus Rapid Transit is a significant enhancement in operations. And so essentially the Bus Rapid Transit will run for roughly 21 hours per day. And it will also have 10-minute frequency, so it will be the most frequent and most longest service in the proposed system today. It will have peak service throughout most of the day and 15-minute frequency on nights and weekends. Another core difference for Bus Rapid Transit compared to what enhanced bus or local service are the actual stations themselves. So our project will have roughly 14-inch level boarding stations. So that means essentially the bus doesn't have to kneel to lower to get to a level boarding. So the bus essentially pulls right up as if it were like a light rail or a streetcar type system. So it allows for much more efficient level boarding, so it's more accessible from an ADA perspective. Another key component is enhanced shelters. So the shelters will have amenities like real-time technology, which is essentially an electronic display board that conveys when the next bus is coming. So it's a much more convenient investment for users. We also have what's called off-board fare collection, and so that would be obviously a new technology implemented into the system. Off-board fare collection is a significant improvement for travel time savings. So essentially, if you can imagine a line of folks that are trying to pay at the front of the bus with the operator, essentially users buy their tickets in advance, and then they can board both sets of doors, the front and the rear, which allows for boarding to be much more efficient and effective. It's very similar to what you've done or used if anybody's traveled and ridden on light rail systems in other cities. Another core component of Bus Rapid Transit is what we call Intelligent Transportation Systems, or ITS. So the project is going to have a significant amount of what we call transit signal priority, which that currently does not exist in the system. Essentially what it is it's a GPS-enabled system that's on the buses, and it talks to the signal cabinets at major traffic signals and tells the signals, hey, the bus is here, it's in this what we call a geo zone, it's within 300 feet. Let's keep the green green so the bus can get through the light, or let's expedite the red and move through the intersection more freely and quickly. We also have designed the system to have more far side station locations, so that enables the vehicles to get through the intersection by using the transit signal priority and then board in a light on the far side of the intersection so it's not held up by traffic and automobiles. So those are some of the core differences that really, when you look at bus rapid transit, what it is, what the rapid means that we're much more efficient within the infrastructure that we have available. And obviously the east-west corridor is a major thoroughfare for the region, but also a spine of the MCTS system. It's also part of Sewer PAC's 2050 Vision Transit and Transportation and Land Use Plan. And so the east-west corridor is identified in that transportation and land use plan as one key transit corridor that's being implemented first. All right, next slide. Again, why this corridor and why BRT? So obviously, don't have to defend transit in this room, hopefully. It sounds like we've got a lot of supporters here. It helps provide an alternative mode of transportation to the automobile, which enables healthy multimodal options and provides access to jobs. When you speak of jobs, this east-west corridor, we have 120,000 jobs that are accessible along this 9-mile route. That's a significant amount of access to jobs. I think when we talk to MRMC, there's a roughly 500 to 1,000 vacant positions out at their campus, providing more efficient and safer access to MRMC, allows more opportunities for employment. We have significant residents within a quarter mile buffer of the route, 47,000 residents, and many hotels, universities, and so on and so forth for access to jobs or access to students. So just to sum up sort of what the bus rapid transit results in, so when we talk about enhanced amenities for users, improved travel time savings, ability to transfer more easily from other major routes, more predictability. Ultimately, what that shows is about 9,500 passengers per day, which essentially equates to over 40 riders per passenger revenue hour. So that is a very strong riding route within the system. It also projects that we would increase the current ridership in the corridor roughly by 17%. So that's essentially we're increasing not only ridership of what's out there with the Gold Line, but also what we see in our ridership models is an increase in ridership on the 30X and the other routes in the corridor because of that improved travel time with the reliability of the BRT. Next slide. Just a snapshot about the corridor itself. As I said, there is a significant amount of population within the corridor. When we look at the half mile buffer, there's roughly 70,000 residents. Of those residents, a significant amount of them, in fact, higher than the average in the city of 21% are zero-car households. When we look at bus rapid transit projects or enhanced transit, we like to look at zero-car households. Obviously, it's allowing to enhance people that don't have choice to ride, and also, obviously, folks with zero-car households are much more likely to take transit than drive a car because they don't have one. We have a significant minority population, in particular on the west side of the city of Milwaukee, at 37% of the entire corridor, and then a significant amount of access to people that live in poverty. We did a number of outreach meetings and folks were extremely excited about it. I think we did at least three or four events at Bethesda Church on Highland Avenue in the near west side and provided information to folks there. We're also in the near south side, we did an outreach meeting at Mitchell Library, and I think we had almost 100 folks attend that meeting. It was a great attendance and showed a lot of excitement. So I think the core and the message of this conversation about the BRT is the East-West Corridor is hopefully the first of many enhanced transit systems in the city and the county. The county is interested in looking at South 27th Street and North 27th Street, obviously a very high ridership corridor, very dense corridor, as a potential next corridor. There's a number of other corridors like Capitol Drive and the Green Line and so on and so forth that could be upgraded to enhance transit service like this. Just to give you a feel for, you know, flair from peers when you do look at peer cities. So Indianapolis, just for example, they're constructing their Red Line, which is the north-south corridor. They're in the process of building 5 BRT corridors in Indianapolis. Grand Rapids, Michigan is opening their 2nd BRT line, the Laker line. And so Kansas City is on their 3rd BRT route. Minneapolis is significantly upgrading their bus system to BRT, various types of arterial BRT, dedicated guideway BRT. So Milwaukee's not alone. We're actually a little bit behind the eight ball on advancing, providing these amenities for our riders, and this project's a great opportunity to start to catch up to our peers. I'm going to pass the torch here over to Dan. And oh, do I have one more? Okay. Oh, yes, yes. So how this ties into next, just quickly, it's you know, as I said, it's a backbone and serves as a strong spine for the entire system, in which routes will be able to you know, tie into the east-west corridor, providing faster, more connected, and increased accessibility. Really, the goals of next is in alignment with the goals of bus rapid transit.
So as Ash said, we, you know, over the last year since we last met with this committee, we've been extremely busy on a number of fronts. The first is on the environmental side. An environmental assessment was completed over about a 10 to 11 month period. And then in November of 2018, we did receive from the Federal Transit Administration a finding of no significant impact for the project, which is a major big step and really good news for the project. It means that FTA is totally involved in this project at this point. So I think that was a big thing that was done.
And you got all the environmental clear to go.
It is all clear. You're right. Right. With that finding of no significant impact, that is a result of an environmental assessment. Right.
Okay.
And as Ash said, one of the things that was really important during that environmental review process was the outreach to the community, both on the corridor as well as off the corridor as well. So I think that was a really important thing. Next slide. We've also been extremely busy working on the design and engineering. During the environmental assessment project, we got up to about 30% design, and after that, with that finding of no significant impact for the environmental process, we then started to go into 60% design. So that was completed in March of this year. We've been coordinating extensively with Wisconsin Department of Transportation, the city of Wauwatosa, and the city of Milwaukee, as well as Milwaukee County DOT on that as well, kind of going back and forth on the engineering. Most of the engineering and design is really around stations, sites, so it's kind of placing where those stations are going to be properly, and then coming up with the actual design of the shelter, and as Ash said, the placement of all those items that would go into that shelter as well then on that station. Currently, we're now in going towards 90% design on the project. We will have that completed by mid-summer, probably August next month, or late August we'll have that complete. And then once that's all done, we'll then have 100% design in late fall, early winter. That's our schedule. We want to be stacking that up so that come next year, I'll get into momentarily, is the construction of the project. Next slide. So the total cost of the project right now is $54 million for that, a little over 9 miles. Of that, about just the planning, design, engineering is about $7.5 million. The actual construction and implementation of the project is about $35 million, and then the purchase of vehicles is at $11.5 million. We are looking at the battery electric buses on this route. And of that, the federal share of that $54 million would come, about 80% of that would come from the federal government, from the Small Start Grant Program. Another good news is that it's not a large increase in the annual operations cost. When you look at what we're putting out there and what is going to be making the rest of the system more efficient, It's approximately 1%, or about $500,000, that would be for the existing work on that project.
Just one other thing to point out as well is, so when you look at the math of the $54 million, roughly 20% is the local share. And as Dan said, through the Small Starts program, that essentially is roughly the cost of our 11 vehicles. So whether you build a BRT project or not, the actual implementation of bringing 11 new vehicles, potentially hybrid electric or electric vehicles, into MCTS's fleet, it's almost a net zero cost to the county to get all these enhanced investments, because essentially the local share is the cost of the vehicles.
Next slide. So where we're at right now, and to finish up, is, like I mentioned, during 2019, we're going from 60 to 90 to 100% design. We're starting to coordinate a lot with utility and third-party coordination in order to get everything up and ready for construction. And then in September, we'll start to think about the vehicle procurement as well. We have on our site right now in early spring of next year to start construction, and it's about a two-year construction process, and then starting revenue service in near probably the fall of 2021 at this point. And that's where we're at right now. I think that's all the slides we have, but we'll take any questions you might have.
All right, thank you for your presentation. Supervisor Dmitrievich.
One quick question. I'm trying to refresh my memory because it was a little while before that we saw this. Will it be like a seamless, fare transition, right? Like, so if you purchase the MCTS fare, you just can go on and off on the BRT, right?
That's correct, yeah. The fare structure, so whether it's whatever the fare is at the time of implementation in 2021, if it's $2 or $2.25 or $2.50, it'll be exactly the same as it is to ride any other local service. Mm-hmm. If you use the M card, the intent is to be able to download payment at the fare box machines to the M card, and or you simply take your M card if you have money on or cash on your M card. You basically set it up against a validator machine, and it validates your ride, and you hop right on.
What I'm having trouble understanding, unless again I missed something, is if you're doing the off-board fare collection for the BRT, are we doing off-board fare collection for the rest of the system? Why would it only be for BRT?
Well, first off, I think, and I can let MCTS talk to the future of that, but the off-board fare collection, we're allowed to do that because of the cost of the fare boxes are paid for through our grant program, right? And so that's obviously something moving forward that you want to look at doing is off-board fare collection. It's really going to be a separate ticket vending machine that has different capabilities of what your machine, so to speak, that you own right now.
Well, I want that for the whole system.
I mean, I think that would obviously be a goal, but the machines are not, you got to replace them, they're not cheap, it's going to take time. It's okay. Sort of like electric buses, transitioning your entire system to electric buses takes time and money. And so the grant program allows the county to do that.
Well, this is something we'll have to continue the debate and discuss. I mean, I realize you're not the decision makers, you're the implementers. But it's odd to me. It almost feels like a dual system. And I realize this is a new service, but we have a service that's been going on for decades and hasn't seen that kind of update. I mean, again, I understand the funding system. I've supported this. But I want to throw out there for discussion probably in the future, that if we're going to update, I mean, it just seems awkward to me that someone has to go to, like, Walgreens to buy their M card, right? A bus driver, or bus client, customer that's been using our bus services for a while, but then, like, someone who's just using the BRT part or whatever, like, it just doesn't seem to flow the way that I'd like it to flow, and I do believe in truly intermodal, multimodal, but, like, I don't like that only the new part of the system is getting that enhancement. It doesn't seem fair to me.
Again, I think it's...
No pun intended. Anybody got that? Okay.
Yeah, and not this debating the goal of continuing to invest and enhance in the transit system. That is absolutely, I think, the goal.
Yeah.
I speak for MCTS, but it's the capital infusion that you get through the grant program that allows MCTS to pay for the fare boxes that enable you to do that. So minus the money, I think money is the issue, right, on being able to pay for those capital.
Well, I would like to conclude my remarks here. I would like us to continue, I'm asking like our directors here,
to evaluate. I know that there's sometimes there's some wiggle room in the grant programs. I mean, if it's for a public transit system and an upgrade, and we're saying that it's one system, I'd like to reevaluate it being used for more than just the BRT part. I've been around long enough. People don't want to believe it, but I'm actually on my way out, so I've been reflecting on that. And I've been here for 15 years, and I've seen, you know, even when we've done park projects or something, you kind of stretch it. If it includes the whole infrastructure, could we reevaluate that? I'm asking our leaders to, you know, to look at that. You know, sometimes you can apply it to the larger system. I mean, this is just a part of a system. So, yeah.
Yes, Supervisor Dmitrievich. So what we have coming up August 1st is a grant application for CMAQ.
Okay.
In which we have been pretty successful in getting more dollars put in so that we can focus on transit. One of the projects that we're looking and we're in the process of exploring, and information will ultimately come to this body as part of that for the application process, is looking at using our phones just like we do for Lyft or for Uber or for anything else for the bus service as a pilot. And it is starting on routes that are not related to BRT.
Mm. Okay. Well, please also look at what I said too, though. Thank you.
Yep,
but I appreciate
understood.
That. Okay. Thank you very much.
Any other questions from committee members? All right. We do have two comment cards.
Can I just ask one question?
Sure, yes.
Because it's been a while since we had this conversation, and I just want to be reminded again how much in the end ended up being dedicated lane out of the...
Yeah, a little over 50% of the project is currently dedicated lane. I think it's 54%.
Okay, thank you. 54%. Thank you for reminding me.
All right. We do have two comment cards. Danielle Teeter.
Good morning, Mr. Washan and the rest of the committee. Coming here pertaining to the discussion of the electric buses again with the BRT, I did some more discussing this morning with the gentleman from Gillig, and Gillig has introduced or are working on an electric bus right now. We've got four of them out being tested as we speak. We talked about the hybrid. There was three different varieties of hybrids out there, and he did inform me, he said, our environment would be a lot more friendly to the hybrid than it would ever be to the electric bus. Because right now, nobody knows how well these batteries are working. There are problems, and they do admit it. Like I said, in Europe, when I talked about the finance committee, 17% of the buses in England are electric. So, I mean, that kind of gives us a little bit of a heads up. Nobody's completely trusting them yet. I did talk to him from Gillig, however, about the bus issue on batteries. And he said in Duluth, Minnesota, at 15 degrees, they definitely shut their buses down for electric. They brought off the road. So we have to be concerned about the fact that both heat and the cold take away from the value of the electric bus. The hybrid, though, is a very nice idea because it does not have to require that you run strictly on battery alone. It allows you to use a small engine. Actually, he said a pickup engine is being used to run their generator, and then they can recharge their batteries as needed. As to the fare boxes, I have a question for the gentleman who was asking or trying to tell us that there was a price to that fare box. My question is how much? Because I know we spent $15,000 for each of the fare boxes we have in place right now. And the question is, are we getting our full value out of it? Because sadly enough, if you look at all the road calls my people still have out in the garages, because I am the chief union steward for the two garages as far as the maintenance, how many road calls we have just on fare boxes alone? I mean, it's not, I hate to say it, it was almost like it would have been better to put a box out there for a goodwill donation than to spend $15,000 and every time you make a road call, they give it a monetary amount. I've been told hundreds, at least 100 plus per road call. So you tell me, where's the savings in this? We didn't really gain anything from it. We actually lost. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for your comments. Mr. James Macon.
Thank you, Chair. James Macon, President 18998. As he was talking about the project, I just got finished talking to the President of Indianapolis, Branson, since he brought it up. I also will be reaching out to Kansas City President that deals with e-buses. Right now, every ATU organization dealing with these have a problem with the buses. So while we're trying to do something, it makes no sense to me. This is old news. This is something that Scott Walker tried to do when he was a county executive, when him and the mayor split that money. My concern is how much money is this costing the county, the city, for this study? That was the same problem where that money that was divided before because it was wasting money for projects. So I will be putting our RFP in today, and I will be sending to Dan Bain. So you will get one today, Dan Bain. I would like to know how much study this will be. These buses will not be used in the city, will be based on the BRT, so I'm going to be talking to my attorney today about filing a class action suit of discrimination, because these buses will not be used in the city. Anytime a bus is being paid by inner city, they should have some use of being used in the inner city. These buses or this design will not be in the city. Next thing is, who's going to pay for when this fund run out? Right now, we are cutting service in the inner city because we don't have enough funding. We are cutting the system 10% because we won't have any funding. But you come up with a BRT that's only going to represent the soft side. Maybe I'll be looking at her again and looking into a discrimination case. There's a lot of problems with this BRT because you have four buses that are already covering this area. You don't need another one. It makes no sense. These people could get on these buses right now. This night, these freeway flyers, they keep running, inner city routes keep getting cut. Yeah. Who's gonna keep paying for this crap? Y'all need to start watching and seeing what y'all doing with money. We don't have enough buses right now on the road at $400,000 a piece, and you're paying electric buses $700,000 a piece. I think y'all need to look at your numbers, who's gonna pay for it, because it's getting ridiculous. $54 million, you say, and we paying 10% of that or 20%? Come on now. Job line is getting cut. There's a lot less money than that. Have a good day. Also, we had a lot of people that we talked to, and I appreciate Supervisor Wyshine riding the bus with us. We had politicians riding with us, and the community would not be able to get out to jobs that's paying more money, and this is what the student says. I have it on Facebook. It's all over the Democrat Party, it's all over the United States, that people are complaining this route is being cut. So it's nationwide now. I'm going to make this nationwide publicity. Democrat Party come here. I'm going to bring it out that how this city is the most segregated city in America, and we cannot get out the inner city, and you bring up a BRT that helps stop that happening. Thank you.
Thanks for your comments. All right. Is informational item? Any other?
Mr. Chair,
Clarify one thing about electric, just so that
you guys.
Just to clarify, on a lot of the other BRT systems with electric buses, they don't have charging bars, so they chose to take the risk that the bus can run on electric power down and back for the full life of that bus run. And so unlike peer cities where they've kind of been the pet projects, we're actually going to have charging bars at the end of the line so that it can charge the battery throughout the duration of the operation in line with the route. And so even if it has, say, runs at 5 hours on full charge, we'll be able to charge throughout the route. So we are learning by being sort of the second tier cities of building BRT from some of the mistakes that are made on the other ones. So hybrid or not, if it were fully electric, as directed by Chairman Lipscomb, I believe, through resolution, that we use electric hybrid. We are planning for that by having charging bars along the route.
Thank you. Supervisor Dimitrios, do you want to receive and place on file?
Okay, I could do that. I'm going to do something else too, but okay.
Sure.
We'll move that we receive and place on file.
You make whatever motion you feel is appropriate.
Yeah, well, it's a good information for our colleagues to have.
Right. Okay, so we just have a motion to receive and place on file. Madam Clerk, could you please call the roll on the motion to receive and place on file number 5?
On the motion that item 5 be recommended to be received and placed on file, Supervisor Sebring?
Aye.
Dmitrievich?
Aye.
Logsdon?
Aye.
Ortiz Velez? Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
4 ayes, 0 noes, the motion prevails.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman?